Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. On June 6th of this year, Tony and Grammy Award winner Renee Elise Goldsberry's debut album, Who I Really Am, was released via Borderlight Entertainment.
Curtains up, bridges down, all over this town. Moving in, going out, get close without a doubt. Breathing deep, outside, with arms open wide. Gotta love the sound of all my friends around. I don't wanna end this day. Wanna play the record forever. I'm never long as you will stay. I don't wanna end this day. Wanna play the record forever. I'm never long as you will stay.
The album coincides with the 10th anniversary of the Broadway phenom Hamilton, which saw Goldsberry win a Tony and Grammy Award for originating the role of Angelica Schuyler.
A toast to the groom, to the bride, from your sister, who is always by your side, to your union. And the hope that you provide, may you always be satisfied.
She also earned a Primetime Emmy nomination for the filmed version of the musical, which streams on Disney+. Other Broadway credits include starring roles in Rent, The Color Purple, The Lion King, Dreamgirls, and more. It was announced just this week that in 2026, Goldsberry will star in the world premiere of David Lindsay Abaire's The Ballisters at Manhattan Theater Club, directed by Kenny Leon. Renee Elise Goldsberry's on-screen credits include the Netflix series Girls 5 Eva, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, The Good Wife, Altered Carbon, She-Hulk, and her two-time Daytime Emmy-nominated role on One Life to Live. The album, Who I Really Am, blends genres in a deeply personal and sonically rich collection. Renee Elise Goldsberry joins us now. Welcome to the Roundtable. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
It is my pleasure. What made it time for such a personal, revelatory album of songs that you penned most of yourself?
It started a long time ago. I actually started this album in 2020. So when time is brought up, my first thought is, what took so long? But you know, what's crazy, as is often the case with most things in my life, I always feel in the process frustrated because things are taking so long. And then when it's time, it feels like the perfect timing. And that's how I feel in this particular instance. I feel like the timing is perfectly ripe. I feel that I'm ready to promote this album. And it's an interesting thing to promote an album when I'm used to promoting other projects like television shows and characters and things that I have a degree of separation from. It's a different thing to promote an album, as you said, that's this personal. And I am ready to do it.
The first word on the album, the first lyric, is introducing. It's in the title track, Who I Really Am. Why did you feel that you needed to emphasize, even with everything that people believe they know about you, you needed to emphasize and introduce yourself in your own terms?
I think it's important to celebrate the sharing of a new side of you. I think that the people that have been down for me, and God bless them, might not necessarily know that I'm a singer and a songwriter. And I think an introduction is in order. I also think that I'm introducing a concept, and that is there are things that people don't brag about, that are so valuable about who they are. And I would love to introduce you to that side of me as well, because I recognize there is a really worthy contribution that I can give talking about things that are more like struggles. And I'm excited about that. I actually also think that introductions tend to fall short. And I don't intend in the 13 tracks to fall short. I intend to share everything I can think of.
What are some of the things that you wanted to make sure that you included that were important aspects of your identity, of your purpose, of your personality that you wanted to make sure were in the songs that you think that you know people were missing without having heard your original music?
I think what you put on an album, you know, the curation of it tells almost as much as the songs do, you know, individually. And I was really excited about sharing my really broad taste in music. And I also think as a performer, as a singer who is known for singing theater, we sing a lot of different kinds of music. That's another thing about timing that works. I think we are no longer assuming that our audience is small. Our audience is incredibly diverse, interests and loves, and loves so many different genres of music. And I'm glad that when you hear this album, you have no idea what's coming next when one song ends.
How did you find what type of song, what genre of music, be it sort of, you know, gospel or funk or ballad? There's sort of like a 90s R&B feel to a bunch of the songs that I really love. How did you pair the lyrics and the stories with the type of music that you would layer them over?
It happens really organically. I never thought I want to do this kind of song. I think it just happens. There's a song on the album called Normal. It's such a pop song. I never thought, oh, I want to put a pop song on the album. But it felt most rebellious as a pop song. And that seems a bit like an oxymoron. But I feel like for me at this time in my life, at this age, to put a straight up pop song that says, I'm normal, this is may not be what you expect from me. It feels controversial. It feels like there's a rebellion in it. And that just came organically out of the messaging of the song.
A lot of times when I speak with singer-songwriters who are known for being singer-songwriters, and that's, you know, they're not actors otherwise or in a different lane of performance, I have to remind myself, or they remind me, that the I of their songs isn't always them. It's a narrator, because their manifestation of the lyrics is different. But this is every I is you. The experiences in the songs are from you.
That is so funny. Almost yes. Almost in every single circumstance, yes. And I think now that you mention this, and this is blowing my mind, the two times that the I is not me are the two songs I didn't write.
That Sarah Bareilles wrote?
Sarah Bareilles wrote a brilliant song called Don't Want to Love You. I see myself in it, but I didn't. It's not written from my perspective in a specific moment, even though it's so universally beautiful and the truth is so universal that I have definitely been in that situation. And though many people come up to me and call me Angelica Schuyler,
right.
I am not in fact Angelica Schuyler. So I have never actually been in that moment in the wedding outside of the Broadway show Hamilton. Those are the two eyes that are not me, but all of the rest of them, come to think of it, are 100% the exposing of my actual life and my perspective on it in the form of a song.
So then I'm to assume, which of course we all know what they say about that, but that staring is about your lovely husband.
It is absolutely about my lovely husband and staring at him in a way that hopefully makes him feel a little uncomfortable.
There are a lot of themes of trust in the record, learning to trust other people, telling people in the lyrics that you trust them now and you're willing to rely on them. There's also faith and trust in a higher power. There's elements of God in your music.
I'm actually glad that you hear that, because that is one song that I wrote that could have gone on this album that didn't. I actually had a straight up spiritual song. And in an album that I consider a home for the outliers, that's what the album turned into. It turned into, you can put Staring on this album, you can put Love Returned on this album, which is very much singer, storyteller. You might be hearing me in a coffee shop tell a story. And the spiritual song didn't make it on. I will release it. But the straight up spiritual song I held back to release individually. And so I'm thrilled to hear that my greatest source of strength and identity, which is my spirituality and my belief in God, is still exists in this album. That makes me happy.
You, of course, worked with Sarah Bareilles closely on the excellent, excellent series Girls 5 Eva. How did her penning a song for your album, you know, stem from that? And did you know each other through music or theater circles before the show, or did you meet working on that project?
One of the brilliant parts of Sarah Bareilles, and there are many, I was doing Williamstown Theater Festival years before, and some people came up to me and asked me if I would sing with them this song that she had written called Many the Miles. I had never heard of her. They played the song, my brain exploded, and I just proceeded to copy every single lick she ever did. And I met her when I was in Hamilton. She came, she was writing Waitress at the time, and I got to meet her backstage after Hamilton, and I told her I was a huge fan. And then in the middle of 2020, when I was in a Zoom meeting Tina Fey and Meredith Scardino asking me to be in Girls 5 Eva, the only other person that had been cast was Sarah Bareilles, who I knew just, you know, kind of in passing. But I remember one of the major reasons why I said yes to doing that job was because I thought, I'll be friends with Sarah Bareilles if I do this job. And it worked out for me. She's one of my greatest friends in the whole world. One day we were on set. I had the courage to admit that I was writing an album. And the first thing she said was, I have a song. And the first song she sent was, I Don't Wanna Love You.
I don't wanna hold on so damn tight to somebody else.
It's perfect.
Cannot get a better friend than that.
Oh, cannot have a better friend than Sarah Bareilles.
The label decided I was difficult just because I wouldn't let my backup singers wear makeup and refused to play venues that also did sports.
Wiki Roy, your incredibly narcissistic and hilarious, talented character on Girls 5 Eva is such a hoot, so funny, not a throwaway moment that isn't just slaying, slaying, slaying. Did you feel like you had a handle on that character from when you first read the script, or did you have to find that mega diva inside of you?
I consider Wiki Roy my Sasha Fierce. Very grateful for her for many reasons, especially now that I'm promoting an album, because she's unapologetically ambitious. When I first encountered the pilot script of Girls 5 Eva, I was just blown away by how many times I would spit take. It's just so funny. So it wasn't her character in particular. Actually, there was one line that she said that it didn't even make the show that I just found brilliant. It was more just this writing team and this concept and being completely blown away by the brilliance of that team and the concept. And then we did a first table read on Zoom because it was COVID. And I got off the meeting, I left the meeting, and I went into my bedroom and I thought, they're gonna fire me. They're gonna fire me. There's no, I literally looked at my phone and I waited for it to ring, because while I had been offered the job without an audition, when I read it for the first time on Zoom, I felt so grossly miscast to play the character. I felt like I'd totally blown it. I felt like it was this fantastic character, and I had no idea how I was going to embody her. And my phone didn't ring, thank God. And then I went to a costume fitting for Wiki, the very first costume fitting. And when they put those clothes on me, I was in the mirror in that room thinking, this is who she is. Hello, Wiki. I was 100% dependent on this brilliant team of designers and the writers. And when Takesha Sturdivant did my hair, and when Matthew, when they put the clothes on me, and I had those words in my mouth, and I was on the set with those women, she just shows up. It was so easy.
Was that the interim before you found it, when you were waiting for your phone? Was that the first time in your career you'd ever felt that way, that you'd gone through a first reading and felt like you had been miscast? Or had you experienced that
Nope, I
before?
feel it all the time.
Oh,
All the time. Almost all
that is
the time.
surprising to me.
Almost all the time. The beauty of it, and there's always a moment, even if it doesn't happen in the very, very beginning, there's always a moment where somehow or another, as a performer, I feel like I have no idea what I'm doing. Something that I took for granted disappears. I used to be able to sing that note. Where did it go? There's always something that keeps me humble, and I'm grateful for it because it makes me do two things. One, work harder, and second, recognize the importance of the community that I'm in and my need for their help. And that's why that's wonderful, because the whole point is really not to make the show. It's the family and your contribution to the family, and your ability to show up and love those people and to learn from those people and to be a light with those people. So when I'm struggling, I always have an opportunity to lean on my friends.
Our guest is Renee Elise Goldsberry. Her album, Who I Really Am, is available to purchase or stream now. Girls 5 Eva Co-op, the musical, which is the original cast album co-op episode of Documentary Now, the IFC series. And you were recently Mrs. T on Everybody's Live with John Mulaney's Netflix talk show. These are really, really hilarious women that you're playing, and beats and comedy, and you're hanging out with, rolling with hugely comedic talents,
Yeah.
but your first part of your career doesn't reflect like comedy chops so much. Were you
Right.
always funny, and are you finding your way into the comedy world and enjoying it, or comedic acting, I should say?
I don't know if you're allowed to say this about yourself, but I'm told I was always funny.
I believe it.
People that know me well are like, oh, that's just Renee. If you knew her, that's just Renee. I'm grateful though, because we can be so many things. We're all everything. We're all funny, we're all vulnerable, we're all, we go through all of the things. The question is, do we feel safe enough, or is there a vehicle to access it in a way that anyone can benefit from it or know it? And so what I'm grateful about in terms of this that role and that show, and then my friends like John Mulaney or Paul Appel or people that call and give me opportunity to be funny again. I'm grateful. I pinch myself, like, what am I doing with these people? But at the same time, I think I'm there for a reason, and until they stop calling, I'm gonna keep showing up.
They're not going to stop calling. I mean, touch wood, I'm not the boss of it, but I can't imagine You're so funny in all of these.
They might call because I'm one of the few people that would put on that Mrs. T on live television. But yeah, I'm grateful for. I think I have tremendously talented friends now in this industry, and when they welcome me to a party, I show up.
Was Mrs. T an immediate yes?
No. Well, actually, yes. It was an immediate. It was an immediate yes to when John Mulaney sent me a text. We had just done a show together on Broadway over Christmas called.
That's right. I saw you both in that. That was the cast
you
that I
did?
Saw. Yes.
Wonderful.
I loved it. Just, I mean, to interrupt you answering a question that I asked, sorry, but when you were playing, that was, you know, vignettes, different scenes. And
yes.
So you embodied a number of characters when you were a little girl. It
yeah.
was so sweet. Like I was, cause you're not a short person, but you were just like acting so young. And I was like, how is she doing that? Like remembering to be a kid like that. It was so great. I mean, all of it was great, but I specifically remember being like, I want to, you know, pick her up and put her on my hip, even though I couldn't.
I wish you would have. it was, you know, I got to sit on stage. We were sitting in chairs and read stories without props and sets and music. And we just literally sat there and read stories at a pretty hefty ticket price. So it was pretty brave of us to do. And we did it together and it was amazing. And he was leaving there to do this show. And I was just honored to get an invitation to come. I just love people that feel like, hey, I'm doing this thing. And, you know, and I think it takes an incredible amount of bravery to do all of the things we do, but especially comedy, and especially in the way that some people do comedy. They love to be hanging out there. They literally, the scarier it is. I remember one time when we were in All In, somebody said, do you, because we had a week of rehearsal before the show opened, and somebody asked us, did we want to put a teleprompter up so we would know what in the world we were saying? And I remember John Mulaney saying, I really prefer that we don't, because it's scarier. And there are some people that recognize, and I know a lot of them. That's one of my favorite things about being in this career, is that I get to work with a lot of people who just jump off a cliff, not knowing what's going to happen, because they have the faith that something interesting will have to take place. and they just are, they become maybe addicted or just comfortable or understand their gift to do that for people. Cause that's what people don't do. Everybody goes through all of these different things, but very few people will jump off the cliff. So when I was asked to play Mrs. T, I said, yes, I had not heard the song. I did not know what I was going to wear. Then they showed me a wig that they wanted me to wear, which was basically a bald cap. And I said, no. But then when I got there, the closer we got to the time of the show, start of this live show, I realized, if I'm going to be here, you can't put a toe in. You got to just jump all the way in. And I'm grateful that I did.
Mrs. T gonna live forever. Mrs. T don't need a thing. Mrs. T is getting benched on Muscle Beach. While you're sippy cup and grill a teen. Recover yourself in muscles.
You also this spring hosted Act One of the Tonys next to Darren Criss, and then also Hamilton did a Hamilton medley performance that was so fun to see everybody back together. That must have been a really emotional night for you to see all of your Hamilton people. I know you, of course, have seen some of them over the years, but everybody reassembled, and then also keeping the energy up while hosting the first part of the show, which I thought you did a marvelous, marvelous job.
Thank you for watching that first part of the show as well. It was one of the greatest nights of my life. And I've had a few. Obviously, the first, that our original Tony night was one of the greatest nights of my life. And mm-hmm. I had been looking forward to it ever since I think I was in Puerto Rico with Lynn when he said, I'm going to need you guys for the 10th anniversary, so be ready. So I've been dreaming of the biggest things ever that we could possibly do in this 10th anniversary. And I wasn't really thinking about the Tonys. I didn't know that that would be such a beautiful, such a gift. And it was, for all the reasons that you said. And the first one is that we were all back together, every single one of us. That meant so much to me, especially because if we do this, when we do this again at the 20, we just can't take for granted that we'll have that opportunity to to reunite in the same way. So that was a real blessing. I think they did a wonderful job constructing the piece, and to do it on that stage with that, with our, you know, the family is bigger than this one group of people that were in the original company of Hamilton. The family is all of the Broadway community, and they were there. And the family is the world that loves the show. And I feel that they were with us. We felt their presence, and the love that they're still giving us for it has not waned at all. I loved the night. I'm grateful that I got to host the first part. It still sits with me in ways that give me tremendous joy.
That's good. We all need things like that to keep us kind of, you know, running.
Yes.
There's also a documentary about your life and the
coming of my family.
Right.
I didn't know to ask for that, honestly. I was looking one day, also in COVID, I was looking through my phone. We were promoting Hamilton, the Disney Plus film.
Right.
I was trying to get content off my phone because I thought it'd be the last time anybody cared. Like, the last time anybody's going to care about my videos from Hamilton are going to be now that this movie's out. And so let me try to get it off my phone. And when I was looking on my phone, I recognized in that way that your phone brings together your different events happening at the same time. And I realized, oh my gosh, I had babies. I was a part of this company giving birth to the show while I was raising a very, very young family. And seeing them together, I just felt like, well, that's a story. So I partnered with a documentarian called Chris Bolin and Melissa Hayslip, and we made this film. And it chronicles both things at the same time, that balance of a mother to do this thing on this really heightened stage and also this very personal thing at home at the same time. It's called Brace Yourself. It's called Satisfied.
a word that's just linked with you for the duration of the English language and your life and the song, which is
not bad at it all.
No, hardly. The doc, it debuted at Tribeca. Is it? It's, and I tried to find it streaming, but it's not out anywhere else yet, or is
not
it?
Not yet out, actually. Yeah, we are. We had this awesome premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival last summer. I did a huge concert before it. It was the day before the Tonys. Really, really amazing. And now they are being very conscientious about where it goes, because there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of places it could go. And it's a very personal story. And I appreciate them shepherding over it with such care. But the minute it's out, I'll let you know. I'd love to come back.
Renee Elise Goldsberry's new record is Who I Really Am. Thank you so much for sharing your talent and so much of your time with me today.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun to talk to you. I really appreciate it.
Who I Really Am, Renee Elise Goldsberry's debut solo album, is available from Borderlight Entertainment. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
I know.